Hello, this is Victor Nyauchi, listening to Clubhouse and Podcast.
Not that cricket.
It's on a day in which the match has been called off because of rain. I don't know if it's Trudeau who decided it or it was just going to rain anyway. My name is Larry Quiterai. By the way, Trudeau is the tropical cyclone that is in the neighborhood at the minute. But yeah, so I'm your Darlington Matambanato. Interesting day today. 44-5 is what Zimbabwe got to. But it was a demon of a wicket, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a... Sorry, hi, everybody. But yeah, sorry. Sometimes I forget my manners. But yeah, it was a very difficult wicket to bowl on. It was seeming around for the quicks. And one in particular, Azmatulla Omazai, bowled really, really well, picking up 4 for 15. Fazal Haq Faruqi also looked very dangerous, but he didn't pick up any wickets today. So it was very difficult conditions.
And Zimbabwe went in with 4 seamers today. Read the conditions and decided to go on that.
And what is interesting is that they were going to give a debut to Newman Nyamuri, who was in the under-19s earlier in the year. He was the top wicket taker for Zimbabwe at that under-19 World Cup. But we didn't, unfortunately, get a chance to see him.
You think it'll have success on there? Especially with the swing? Looks like it was giving something for the left-handers, especially.
So for me, the thing I like most about Newman Nyamuri is the kind of left-arm quick who pitches in the line of the wickets and gets it to swing away if you're to the left-handers or into the right-handers. And I think he would have done very, very well here. And I think, actually, if I could go back 28 years and get a debut at 20, I think you want to get it in these conditions as a seam bowler. You don't really want to get those hot, difficult October, mid-October, 40-degree sun, conditions.
Oh, you don't want to get it at Queens when it's doing nothing.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately we didn't get to see him today, but I think it's a very positive move. Because I think that initially the idea was that he probably wasn't going to get to play much cricket in this series. But at least he'd learn the ropes over the next sort of couple of months and maybe have a look at him during the Island series.
So I guess it might be a case of they want to see, they want to rest one or the other. So, but they had chosen both Blessing and Richard, but the indication was they were keeping around that if there was an opportunity when they needed to rest. I guess today the opportunity was it was a juicy wicket, and they felt that they would choose him ahead of Tunumaposa because he's a left armer as well, and also he's got that swing.
Yeah, and even though he's a left arm seamer, he does very differently to Richard Ngarawa. Richard Ngarawa doesn't really swing the ball into right handers. He does that. Richard Ngarawa is probably 195 centimeters tall, and Newman Nyamuri is probably around about 170, 175, a little bit shorter, skinnier. So different trajectory and different work plans, in that he's looking more to swing the ball, where Richard Ngarawa really looks to try and hit the deck quite hard, and surprise batters coming forward.
Rather brave from Charles Langeveld, say 18-year-old, get in.
But again, I think it's the conditions, ideally, because we know he's got talent. He's been on the radar for a while. I mean, it's actually quite competitive to get difficult to get into the Zimbabwe under-19 World Cup side, and the fact that he was able to beat off, 20 other kids for that spot, shows already, and be the top wicket taker as well, shows you already that he's got the basics of what is required at international level, because it's not, international cricket, but it's still very difficult, very competitive for a 19-year-old. And I think that we've seen through history that under-19 World Cup has produced some really good players. At the moment, Marupi says Jaiswal, India, Kohli, Rohit Sharma were under-19. going back, because I think Joe, it's been Root. Joe Root,
yeah.
Joss Butler, going back, because it's going back now, probably nearly, it's probably nearly 30 years, it's 30 years this year, because I played in the last, I played the last under 19 tour before they introduced that, and that was in, I'd like to say, 1994, and then the first under 19 World Cup was in 1995. So guys like Dave Mutendeda played in the under 19 World Cup.
Oh, fascinating stuff. See, there we go. Not showing his age at all. So, so now you look at it just a bit more on human. He got his cap from Sean Williams. You think normally you get it from a bowler?
Well, I don't know, because I understand the process is you get to ask who you get your cap from.
Yeah.
You get to choose. So obviously Sean Williams has had some impact, some emotional connection has happened between Newman and Sean. We saw today that Ben Curran was capped by his uncle, who is a cousin of... it's not imposed upon you who caps you. So it's a choice that you're allowed to make, because it's the only time it's going to happen. So I think
There is the T20, there is the test.
I mean, what I mean is, it's the only time you're ever going to get a one-day international cap, you know. Yeah, so I think they give you, because they know how special a moment it is for a cricketer. So they give you the option to get somebody that you have some attachment or connection to do that for you.
There was a lot that was happening out there. For those who will be listening, you'd have heard there was a bit of a glitch, lost about 2 seconds. And it was talk about Kenny Anzio who capped Ben Curran. But going back to the match today, I think you said something offline. You said even a mature international got a bunch of hundreds, like Sean Williams. Like, I have no idea what to do with this surface.
Yeah, I know. Because Sean looked out of place. I saw Raza put on a dance move when one ball just swung and jumped on him, and he looked like he was doing, I don't know if you know Kongonya, the African, the local dance. But yeah, it was a very difficult surface. And my own feeling is that if you manage to get sort of towards 90, past 19, to even past just a little over 100, with the bowling attack that Zimbabwe had today, I think conditions were going to stay the same. I think Zimbabwe could have defended almost any score that they made here. Because it was such a bowler's paradise.
Such a vicious surface. And, you know, Ben Curran is another one we talked about him getting his cap today. Not much you can talk about him, given the surfaces there. But he got 15, the highest score when play was called off.
Yeah, not really much to say. He wasn't really given an opportunity to do much because, as I said, the bowling was of that quality that you can't really be expected to do much more than survive against it. He wasn't able to do that, which is unfortunate. But yeah, there's not really much to say. I mean, the lead up to this is what we can talk about. Is, I think, 300s already in the season, 2 first class 100s, 1 list day 100, I think 6 scores in the 50 plus in total, including those 300s. So, you know, he's and this is not his first season that he's got those sort of numbers. So he's earned the right to actually get a call up.
So, I mean, he's a guy, look, for me, it was a no-brainer. But interesting was bringing Bennett up to play at number 3.
I think it was, the reasoning there is that the guys who make runs for us are Raza, Irvin, and Sean Williams. You want to try and hope that the wicket's going to settle.
Uh-huh.
And so you're like, you know what, we're not expecting you to make a whole bunch of international runs yet. We're thinking you're going to do that somewhere in the future. So what you're going to go and do is go and protect our run machines. And I think that's the impression that I got.
Meanwhile, Sean comes and is dancing. Yeah. No, I mean, he jigs his bat out for one. And Raza is dancing and Craig is just watching from the other end. It could have been a script for a film, couldn't it? If you watch it, you said that, like, okay, what is happening out there? Because this just looks like a nightmare.
Yeah, it did. But I've also got to just, looking back through our playing days, my playing days, we had that, and it used to happen a lot in the sense that you arrive at any one of the grounds in Zimbabwe, and there's been a week of rain in the lead up to that game, and you've been coming from October wickets where everybody makes runs, everybody in the side expects to make runs, you'll walk up to a game and the week the rains have started, you've got sides with 400s in them and stuff like that, and then that side will turn up, be bowled out for 56 on day one of a Logan Cup match, ball the other side out for 90 on day one, and then it settles down into business as normal for the rest of the, you know. But it's just generally what happens when rain livens up our wickets.
Now, looking at it, majority of the coaching department for Zimbabwe is from South Africa. And we know South Africans love their pace bowlers. Is this sort of like going to be a rejigging of Zimbabwe's, you know, makeup as a national team? In that, it's not the first time they've gone for a seam-heavy attack. They did that in Bulawayo. On Bulawayo's surface, many people consider it as a spinner's paradise, but of course that surface is particularly different. But is this sort of where we think that Zimbabwe might be going to, where they want wickets prepared for pace rather than for, you know, so that the spinners can have an effect? I mean, adding into that a lot of our spin wickets have been taken by Sikander Raza and Sean Williams, who are on the tail end of the career. So it's not like we've got a bucket load of spin that has taken other wickets.
Well, I think the realities of international cricket, right, is that because Zimbabwe has the ambition to pre-qualify for every ICC tournament. That includes the World Test Championship, and then includes the ODI and the T20. So you have to get a rating, be in the top 8 teams in the world. If you look at the top 8 teams in the world, okay, I think 4 of them are fairly pace heavy countries, like pace, dominated by pace. I think Australia, I think South Africa, I think New Zealand, okay, and then England, depending on where you play in England. Generally, you're going to be playing at least at a minimum 3 quick bowlers, usually 4. So I think the realities of international cricket are the ones that say, listen, if you want to compete at international cricket, you have to figure out how to have 3 high quality fast bowlers in your side, sometimes maybe even 4. And I think it's a realization that we've been forced into, because we generally always produce 2. So we'd have, for example, we'd have Chris Mpofu and Tendai Chatara as the 2 in our side, and then the third one wouldn't be of the same quality. And I think it's a realization that if we want to do those things, if you want to be in the top 8 teams in the world, we need to be able to literally have 5 or 6 fast bowlers you can call on at any time. And it's not just Blessing and Richard. We need to make sure that beyond Blessing and Richard, you've got 3 or 4 other guys who are of serious quality.
So, speaking of Blessing and Richard, the thinking was you probably want to give them a bit of a rest. Maybe the head coach did not call it rest. I think he wants to load them up on something.
Load management, I think.
No, he actually wants to, so that they have enough to be able to bowl 20 overs in a day. What do you call that?
All right. Well, look, in theory, what you're supposed to do is you want to be, because you're going to lose weight. If you bowl in a test match, you let's say your typical weight is 90 kgs, as an example. You're going to lose somewhere between 5 and 8 kgs, depending on how much you bowl, in a typical day of bowling in a test match, on a bowling day. Mm-hmm. So what you generally want to do is allow guys to have a rest enough, because putting on 8 or 9 kgs actually takes a few days. You can't do it in a couple of meals.
Yeah.
So you actually have to take some time off, get that weight back up.
Yeah, so I forget the word that he used, what essentially was to be able to load them with something. It's almost like put some hours into, I don't know, so that they can sustain. Guess maybe that's what you're
talking. Because the other thing about it is that, you know, every time you play an international, you lose a little bit of weight.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of back-to-back internationals. You don't have that gap in between to put back that weight that you lost in the game.
Yeah.
And so often what you have to do is take a week off. And that generally that week off means very, very low intensity, cardio, very low intensity, work for that week. So you put back some of your thing. allow your muscles to fully recuperate before you actually get into a long test match. Because a test match ball, your guys are going to bowl 20, 25 overs in a day. All right? Been doing 4 overs a day. They've been doing 10 overs a day. Then suddenly you're looked on for 25 overs a day. And then if you have a bad innings, you could actually end up bowling maybe 40 overs in an innings of a test match. Uh-huh. You know?
So do you rest either one of them this second ODI? We've got Victor Nyawuchi. I guess the plan was you probably want Newman to debut on this one, so that if you one up, or if you get into the second one and it's 1-1, you don't want to get him coming in for the third match where it's a series decider, for example. And therefore, you know, nerves are going to be a bigger issue. The other issue is like, you should be able to just bring him, throw him in the deep end. I know that old school dudes be thinking like that, but the question, let's say, supposing we're thinking in the first instance, is do you still rest either one of them or even all of them?
I think you should. And I think you should probably, you have to rest them. You're going to have to rest them anyway. So I'm of the school of thought that says, you know, you're gonna take off a Band-Aid.
But they didn't play today. Isn't that the rest?
Oh, I suppose. It could be counted as that. But, like, imagine they had played. If you have to do something, I'm for ripping off a Band-Aid rather than soaking it in water and gently pulling it off. You know what I mean? Because there's never going to be a good day to do it. You know, there's never going to be a day where Zimbabwe is so dominant, at least not in the near future, where you can be like, oh, no, we can rest 3 guys and not have a worry in the world. That day is just so far in the future that I don't think, but because that day is so far off, I just say do the hard things early, okay, and then the future is going to take care of itself.
I suppose it's the same thing with if Trevor Gwandu does not take that debut in early in December last year, he doesn't develop into players now.
Yeah, and remember that debut. I think we had conversation about it. We didn't add it in your. We didn't do a podcast about it, but I think I was quite vehement about the fact that I didn't think he was ready. But like now he's looking a much better cricketer because he's had that hardening experience. I also think that Zimbabwe is a slightly different cricket culture to maybe South Africa or Australia, where you find South Africans and Australians come out of high school and they're ready for international cricket for some bizarre reason.
I have a theory around that, because the Zimbabwean cricket players are often having to play rugby and so many other sports, so you have to keep changing your weight. So, and it's like cricket is the third term and the first term, and so rugby second term, and they play multi sports, which is very well and good. It makes you all rounded person, but I think to a large extent, it doesn't develop your skills in a specific outcome.
I need to just remember, you might need to remind me of this. I'll send you a link to a video I saw of AB de Villiers playing provincial rugby. And he was a fly half. He was about 20 or 21 before he really got his international career going. He was a fly half and he's quite a good one.
But I get that. But what I'm saying, the amount of the, you know, cricket that they end up playing, it makes them more hardened. Whereas in Zimbabwe, there is this period of intense cricket, and then you're told, look, let's go and play this other sport.
Maybe it might be.
And also, how many? I could go and give you an example of a rugby player who's also a boxer and stuff like that. There are examples of players that can become pretty talented at certain levels, but I don't think that there are many players who can spend 3 months of the year developing their cricketing skills, and then the rest playing hockey and the other one playing, you know, rugby. Hockey and cricket might be a bit of a relation there because, you know, the use of the stick and all that other stuff with the bat. Mm. But ultimately, you know, those are questions that can be asked. Like,
I mean, and it's a valid question. I think the real problem is if you are not paying somebody who develops athletes for you, they develop those athletes on their terms.
Yes.
So we 100%. Have a school system that develops our cricketers. So that's why we you know, it's not the ideal system. And I think that's generally probably why Zimbabwe cricketers mature late. Because they only start hardening mentally at provincial and then international cricket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Some of them are having to learn to be hard at international cricket.
International cricket. So I think that's probably, you know, but then you know what it is? It's not a system that I want to change, because it's part of the culture of what we are. You know what I mean? So what you don't want to rejig a whole system. I think that's usually counterproductive. Because what you do is you create, when you rejig a system, right, you create a period where performance degrades first before everybody catches up with the way the whole new system works, and then performance, and then there's no guarantee that performance is ever going to surpass what it was before you rejig the system.
I would rejig the system and say, look, I think Uprising should be playing cricket at least nine months a year, and we need to figure out how we can get them to play club cricket nine months a year. Like how they do in India, where kids are always playing cricket.
Well, technically, National League is supposed to be starting in January. It's been pushed forward till March, but usually it starts in about January. And then if Uprising plays well enough, they get into NPL and then they'll play until October.
Yeah, but when did that last happen? Because end up having March and then you have back-to-back matches. It happens over 2 weeks, 2 months or something like that. If that, then it's done. So all I'm saying is, the Indians are always playing cricket, and that's why they develop those skills. And in Zimbabwe, unless you are, like right now, if you're not playing, provincial, where are you?
No, but I also will tell you the difference. This is why I said our culture is so important. Our culture, we don't play street cricket. It doesn't exist here.
Yeah, but the thing is, I get you, but go ahead.
Yeah, but like we don't have like street cricket. So, there used to be a little street cricket thing that used to happen at the corner of 5th Avenue and Chitepo.
And the 5th, yes,
yeah, and it used Sixth. To, and then it was turned into a parking lot for the government buildings in that area.
Yeah.
And there used to be street cricket there, and I used to go there and play. Yeah. But like, honestly, like it's difficult to just find a pickup game of cricket. Like, you know, like the thing where you can just like a few hours after work, you go and play some cricket and then carry on. Whereas in India, there's too many of them. And then some of them are too good because street cricket has got slightly different rule setups, ways you play it, and the balls you use vary so much that, you know, they even have leagues for street cricket. But it's part of the culture because, like by far, there's no other sport in India quite like cricket. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, okay, so this is equivalent of what used to be our street football, because the kids are not playing as much street football as they used to be.
Yeah, because...
But I guess it's also like parents are not encouraging their kids to play sport for fun. It's like, I want this to become a career for you because there are opportunities.
And then the other thing I've seen, because I've got two like teenage sons, right? The other thing I've found is that there's so many more options for them to do like entertainment. When I was growing up, we couldn't, video games were not affordable in the standard that I grew up in.
And TV used to start at 5 p.m.
Yeah, so if you were on school holidays, you spent the day having to entertain yourself. You didn't have a phone. Now I see every kid, almost every kid I see these days, got a phone that's got Grand GTA, it's got FIFA, it's got... So his day's entertainment, as long as he's got power, it's worked out.
Yeah.
Where I didn't have all those things. So what... And then there was... I grew up with two other brothers. There was three of us. So what we ended up doing was playing a variation of football, cricket, tennis, swimming, and whatever, all the time, because that's how we entertained ourselves. Or it was sit around and read books.
Okay, so what is the where do people find you? Socials?
I'm Darlington Matambanazo, one word, on Facebook and on Twitter. Sorry, not on Twitter, on Instagram. And then I am Dali_Mataz on Twitter.
We are the Club Asim Podcast. My name is Larry Kwederai, and this is Darlington Matambanazo. And remember, we're available on wherever you listen to your podcasts, except YouTube. Still not done that. But yes, follow us on Three Men and a Boat on X, Three Men and a Boat on Facebook. at 3mob.com, on YouTube and as well as Instagram. Yeah, otherwise, please do subscribe and share. It helps us grow our podcast and makes us able to give you more and more products in as far as this is concerned. Thank you very much for joining me. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show.